it's a great pleasure to introduce Dean Young to you tonight. For over 20 years now, I've known him and read his work, and you know, it's been a thrill to see the Dean Young I first met, who was an earnest young poet enrolled in nursing school, who wrote these very strange and original poems on a manual typewriter that seemed ancient even then, become the Dean Young of today. And he still writes his poems on a manual typewriter. He didn't finish nursing school, and those strange and original poems have turned into one of the most unique and startling and consoling bodies of work you can find in American poetry today. You encounter in his six volumes of poetry work that really counts, work that you can honestly say helps to bring the language forward. His poetry accomplishes this goal in part because it is slyly subversive. It sets itself against all the received pieties of the period style, often whimsically, but sometimes with a ferocity that tells you that this writer is tired of the aridness, of the timidity, and the hand-wringing self-importance which our poetry has so often become. He doesn't do this with the hectoring voice of a crank, well, mostly he doesn't, but through a persona whose by turns he's quizzical, he's pissed off, he's vulnerable, he's raconteuring, he's unflappable, and he's tender. His aesthetic derives from the surrealists, and he offers his surrealism straight with no chaser, not as a wishy-washy indulgence in dream states and vaguely Jungian symbols, but as the sensibility which best serves to describe the way things are in these times, the randomness, the brokenness, the channel selector with a life of its own, the absurdity that can at one moment be bracing and at another moment tragic. This is all to say that I love his poetry, and I don't think more than a week or two has gone by in these last 20 years when I haven't looked at his poetry and studied it and cared for it. He's received many honors and awards for his work, including fellowships from the NEA and the Guggenheim Foundation, and his poems have appeared in hundreds of the best journals, and his sixth and most recent collection, Elegy for Toy Piano, has just been issued last month by the University of Pittsburgh Press. He's taught at a number of universities and colleges, and he's presently on the faculty of the esteemed University of Iowa Writers' Workshop and the Low Residency MFA program of Warren Wilson College. And I'm just really happy to introduce you tonight to Dean Young.
Well, that was the high point for me. Thank you, David. As David mentioned, I teach in two MFA programs, and who I am in those MFA programs is really, really different. In one, I'm the old fogey. I'm always talking about Keats and Hopkins and the necessity of locating poetry in real lived experience, and the fact that I think maybe words do have reference, and it's not all that bad of a thing. And in the other one, I'm the champion of the avant-garde, which is a lot of fun because you just get to throw bombs all the time. So, in many ways, this poem comes out of that, a kind of anxiety about that, about wondering where I belong, because in both places, who I am is that I don't belong there. But I think for young writers, that's one of the biggest challenges, to figure out where you belong. You have to create your own connection. You have to create your own readership, and you have to figure out who they are and what they think about poetry. So it can seem really horrible, but it's also a source of liberation. So basically, I think you don't have to worry about it. So anyway, this poem is called Whose Side You On Anyway? Once there was a mountain here, then a glacier came, and when the glacier melted, the ground looked like brains. So some critics came along to decide who was avant-garde enough. Those that weren't attacked Russia, where some structuralists were saying everything was a structure, even your mother. Like deaf mutes in airports selling cards, saying they're deaf mutes, the avant-garde sold poems, saying they're poets, or everyone's a poet, or what's a poem, or die, whitey, die, or representation equals capitalism's whore. Meanwhile, someone messes up a bunch of packing instructions, and that's pretty avant-garde. Someone else writes about smacking a deer with his car, feeling kind of bad, and that's not avant-garde, so off to Russia, here's your carbine. Then a whole class of poets gets out of going to Russia through connections and bands together to form the Academy of American Poets to protest high dry cleaning costs. Then someone comes up with a book that's not even in words, publishes 20 copies on butcher paper and burns them. And that's so fucking avant-garde, the seafloor rises 10,000 feet and becomes a desert. Perfect for a school where the poet slash critic slash professor says, take off your clothes. And when the students take off their clothes, shouts, too late. Wreck subjectivity, too late. The blood of Walt Disney is on your hands. Explode syntax, allude to the Renaissance. Metaphor is fascism, memory is a lie. Too late, too late, too late. Roses are blue, the quality of mercy is chow mein. First thought, butt shake. See this shoe? It's a text. Hard not to miss attacking Russia, even with only a frozen rat to eat. Powder burns, constant concussion, so you can't even think. Hard not to miss trying to slip a potent image by the censors. Some sort of uplift in the end, a talking rose or kiss made of mist. This is a poem about being incredibly self-involved. It's called Self-Search. When we look around for proof of basic epistemological matters, that life is an omen only seeming smattered, a dream brought on by snaggled meat. Often the self blocks the view of the car or cat or car race. So all we find are me leaves, me meows, me machines of speedy impulse me. Maybe the points to see the self as a kind of film that tints everything, say, bluer, more youer, and yet look through. Whatever you have to do. Volunteer at a shelter changing the abandoned hamster's litter. Put together a coat drive for the poor. Go door to door for your candidate. Be devoted to a lover or lose yourself cheering in a crowd. Go hens. Go higher, go lower, to see perhaps the sky as a rock might. Meditate until you become a beam of light. Be divided as a 3x27 and not get overcome by your identity ending or expect to reappear after the decimal. Perhaps we should be practicing not having a self to claim. One day it's baggage we're without, no longer waiting for it to squirt out onto the conveyor belt with all those others that look so much alike. Yet it is sad to imagine no me around to press his nose into your sleeping hair. I worry death won't care. Just a bunch of dust rushing up, some addled lights, some chills, then nil. I like too much that old idea of heaven. Everyone and pet you've lost runs up, which could not happen if there's no me to meet. Self, I'm stuck with you. But the idea of becoming unglued is too much and brings tears that come, of course, because you're such a schmuck. Some days you crash about raving how ignored you are, then why the hell don't people let you alone? But I've seen you two perform small nobilities, selfless generosities. One way or the other we'll part, I'm sure, and you'll take me with you. This is called Mannerist. It is said a hole knocked in the ceiling of the flat Caravaggio fled, skipping rent, explains the light source of those late works. The problems for the authority, a lot of pissed off swordsmen, was catching him, and we can only guess someone finally did, as his body was never found. Constant in this world are the problems of landlords and lighting, and the sense of something out to get you. I tried to solve the death rattle in the middle of the night problem by draining the radiator. The encroaching shadows every moment your last predicament by reaching out the window and sawing off the spooky scratching branch. Because of what I read about consciousness and death, I did not intervene but watched the broken bird grind its eye on the sidewalk. Then I turned away on mercy killing. I tried to solve the why am I so dumb problem by reading books I couldn't understand. How about just leaving it all alone, not getting out of bed? The problem itself perplexed by a plethora of variables, tax bracket, traffic pattern, therapeutic workshop, exhausting failure, waste of raw materials, disastrous disproportion like forever adolescent, just lying in the innocent seeming gloxinias. You can't go forward and you can't go back, and staying still ain't an option. Perhaps it's best to embrace a what the heck philosophy. Put some words in the word balloon, hardly matters what. As the cartoon concerns the conversation of a trash can and a duck. It's spring in another week. You're not so awfully off after all. The heart is drawn from its yellow tub, still beating. Any questions so far? David, what do we have for our studio audience tonight? While darkness picks its flowers in the mind, we were passing through the car wash when it hit me, we were all going to die. I kept the news to myself. No sense alarming everyone any more than scaring turkeys at before slaughter. Just makes the meat coppery. Let them stay cozy in the absurd familiarity of their shared revelatory space, thinking the clean, bubbly thoughts only possible in a car wash. No need to worry about the brains filling with urine. No problem with rabies or swamp gas transforming you into murderous slime. My window leaked a little line of sudsy drool, like the line between life and death we all must cross. Siegfried lifts his sword to his lung's highest note and charges into the dry ice smoke. Starlings rise from a tree, preserving momentarily the shape of the tree, so it's rising from itself. Then explodes. Just two examples of the visions that stampeded my mind with a dog paddle panting. At least we had the company of each other, tugged towards our final threshing. Then maybe after the million years necessary to break down the harmful chemicals, a giant magnet will harvest our precious metals, our preposterous petals, smashed idols, for a shiny, shiny monument. This is called 10 Inspirations. And it's entirely possible that this poem is really, really dull. And it comes with numbers. And I'm not going to read the numbers because I hate it in poetry reading when people read numbers. It's like, especially when they don't tell you how many sections there are, the scariest word you can hear in a poetry reading is 4. Because at that moment, you know, you're in infinity then. Because 3, you're all thinking, it only has 3 sections. That's it, you know. 3 is the number. But 4 means, like, it's never going to end. But you can count to yourself to 10. And most of you are well equipped to do that. You decide to make soup. You don't have any carrots or onion, any celery or chicken or leaves. You have water and salt, though. Boil 10 minutes, serve. And afterwards, this simple soup can be used to wash your face. You decide to make a masterpiece. You do not have any paints or thorns, any genius or paper, any pianos or sticks or rubber. You have air, though. No doubt about it, a masterpiece. You decide to make a god. Don't have no commandments, no Renaissance altarpieces, no relics, tax-sheltered televangelist, funny hats. You do have yourself. Wow, God acts just like Walt Whitman. You decide to tell your sweetheart how much you like humping him or her. But even as you're coming, his, her nipples stiff as pearls under your palm, you know there's something deeper you love. You decide to make a flower. You don't have any seeds, bees, bat guano, engravings, pitchforks, sunshine, scarecrows. You have a feeling, though. Presto. You decide to make a gift. You have artificial eyes, education, lightweight wing material, electricity, sugar, chloroform, a bedroom, doo-wop. I can't wait. You decide to make a moon. Then realize you don't have room anywhere to put it. One moon will have to provide enough rhyming opportunities. You decide to make a match. You don't have any sulfur or magnesium, no striking surface, accelerant, or slogan. You give up and sleep, and a bride-sized spark plug tells you to look within. You look within. There's a seahorse. You are in your pajamas eating cold pizza when you decide to make a coyote. Now all you need is a pregnant coyote. Clam Ode. One attempts to be significant on a grand scale in the knockdown battle of life, but settles. It is clammy today, meaning wet and gray, not having a hard calciniferous shell. I love the expression, happy as a clam, how it imparts buoyant emotion to a rather, when you get down to it, non-expressive creature. In piles of ice, it awaits its doom pretty much the same as on the ocean floor. It awaits life's banquet and bouquet and sexual joys. Some barnacles, we know, are eggs dropped from outer space. But clams, who has a clue how they reproduce? By trading clouds? The Chinese thought them capable of prolonging life, while clams doubtlessly considered the Chinese the opposite. I remember the jawbreakers my dad would buy me on the wharf at Stone Harbor, New Jersey. Every 30 seconds, you'd take out the one in your mouth to check what color it turned. What does that have to do with clams? A feeling. States of feeling, unlike states of the upper Midwest, are difficult to name. That is why music was invented, which caused a whole new slew of feelings, and is why, since, people have had more feelings that they know what to do with. So you can see it sort of backfired, like a fire extinguisher that turns out to be a flamethrower. They look kind of alike, don't they? So if you're buying one, be sure you don't get the other. The boys in the stockroom are stoners who wear their pants falling down and deserve their own island in Gulliver's Travels. The clam, however, remains calm. Green is the color of the kelp it rests on, having a hell of a wing-ding calm. I am going to kill you in butter and white wine, so forgive me, great clam spirit. Join yourself to me through the emissary of this al dente fettuccine, so I may be qualmless and happy as you. Some of the time I'm lucky enough to live in the Bay Area, and one of the things I like about it is the fog. The fog kind of gets me off the hook, because it's like being trapped inside of a Wallace Stevens poem, particularly the lines, it's morning all afternoon. Yeah. So it's like even at 3 o'clock, it feels like you still have a chance. The fog doesn't always shout to you, wake up, wake up. This is called Son of Fog. When the fog burns off and the air's pulverized diamonds And you can see beyond the islands of forever, far too dramatic for me. It hurt something behind my eyes near the sphenoid. Not good. I prefer fog with fog behind it, uninflammable fog. Then there's no competition for brightness, no Byron for your Shelley, no Juno eclipsing your Athena, no big bridge statement about bringing unity to land masses. All the thought balloons are blank. The marching band can't practice. Even a bird's got to get within 5 feet before it can start an argument. Like dead flies on the sills of abandoned nurseries, we too are seeds in the rattle of mortality. A fog-like baby god picks it up, shakes it, laughs insanely, then goes back to playing with her feet. I have felt awful cold and lonely, and fog has been blotting paper to my tears. My dog is fog, and I don't have to scoop its poop with my hand in a plastic bag. There are sensations that begin in the world, the mind responding with ideas, but then those ideas cause other sensations. What a mess. We stand at the edge of a drop that doesn't answer back. Fog our only friend, although it's hell on shrimp boats. There, there, says the fog. Where, where? You can't see a thing. This is called Paradise Poem. I swear I'll never drink tequila until I can fly again. Problems with the landing gear. The only smart thing I did was fill my mouth with crickets, so Duke Sapp could take a picture of them boomeranging out. But our genius ended there, and he botched the developing, so it was just one blur in another, same as now. From the practical point of view, the law of conservation of matter is a joke. People, prepare for your doom. We need to get deeper in Dante, at least to the eagle made of faces. But I'm not ready for the paradise conjecture. Too much doesn't fit. Too much of Western civilization is architecture, bilge, frass, certain notes only possible through inhuman squeezing. I want a phone that rings with a wolf howl. I want to avoid classical music bragging about its intelligent punks, redundant suicides. I want to get as close as possible to rain without actually being in it. My umbrella, a total collapse, just another metaphysical argument. I would rather spend an hour with a dying squirrel than tour a cathedral, although I like the poor lighting, the tortured frescoes, as if you can be threatened into paradise. But I'd miss my bicycle. I tried painting it so ugly no one would steal it. I'd miss taking out the garbage. Does anyone take out the garbage in paradise? Scrunching the lid down satisfaction, dragging the drum to the curb catharsis. No one in paradise hears the truck at dawn and thinks it's grinding up body parts. A rubber doggy squeak toy is probably a demonic force. A ham sandwich in a paper bag. I have a slight surprise for you, she said. What was this angel doing with me? Wow, a huge scar down the center of her chest. Rabbit, I love you. The capacity to feel is good to have. You know you are alive when you feel the ravine's minuet of sadness, the octopus's gladness at being in the sea and not a jelly jar. Having feelings allows us to do nothing, but still feel something is getting done. Many thinkers know the feeling of the feeling, but few have glimpsed the feeling of the feeling of the feeling. The rabbit does not move, waiting for the yard to turn rabbit-colored and thus make it feel invisible. Huh? You can argue for hours about a rabbit if the feeling is there, which is often not about the rabbit, but the person you argue with. Her hair tied to a river, her unstable tongue. Such heat in the world you and the rabbit share. and cold demurs the glacier. You lock your keys in the car, and there's a feeling waiting. Read Nick Carraway's last words, and yep, a feeling. There are no ordinary feelings, just as there are no ordinary spring days or kicked over cans of paint. Are feelings ever succinct? The haiku is quick, but its ripples to the horizon go. Feeling. You think you have it under control, then whammo, a new blast hole in the middle of the couch, where you're TV watching some excessively handsome people try to defuse an atomic bomb. And now your throat is shaking. Tears. Even for the toddler, feeling is 1,000 years old, just as the smile of Mona Lisa is new every 15 minutes. You've got to be kidding. Matter, antimatter, there's still a lot unaccounted for. Feeling, you'll never stop bushwhacking me like unsyntactically crows flying from a tree. Even in sleep, dreamily, I leap from the top stairs to grab the arrow about to pierce my father's chest. I saved him, I think, for a moment. Then the feeling, no, that isn't so. So the grasses grow. I would be sad without potato chips, but much worse if you chopped off my arm. Being sad is a form of exsanguination, so perhaps to the bottom of sadness I could get as I bled to death. I do not know. I do not want to know. Already you took my turtle and left me the plastic pond dish and plastic palm tree, then gave me my first funeral. We buried a jewelry box. I don't want a spider quadrupling in the center of my chest, O spider of pain. Here, take my Babe Ruth stamp, my Day of the Dead skull man with the elk head on top of his. I do not own a pair of castanets, but take those too. Perhaps you could edifyingly divert yourself with 19th century Russian novels, where awful things happen even though people think a lot. A lot. Maybe because? Check out this book of Gorky drawings, especially page 74, but do not take Brenda, not even one piece, even though you take her mother, who takes a Brenda piece along with her. That, I know, can't be helped. And do not take my love while she is at her windsurfing lesson or anywhere in between. You already took her wallet and charged a house full of furniture, terrible ottomans, hideous divans, corpuscular easy chairs, before she even noticed you are that quick. But how slow you were with my dad, tooth by tooth, gasp by gasp. I could tell he was afraid. I looked down the road where someone was buying shoes. Is it possible to choose a pair solely by the prints they'll leave in the dust and snow? I know you have a job to do. Without you, there would be no beauty, no nitrogen cycle or atmosphere or cantaloupe. No gleam without a maggot, no cloud without tears. How it smells like rain, then it rains and rains and rains. This is the last poem I'll read tonight. And it's an elegy for the great poet, and very proud to say, my friend, Kenneth Koch. I felt a great sort of, well, obligation, you know, to write an elegy for Kenneth when he died. And yet my aesthetic is based upon the obliteration and the disavowal of obligation. So you can see it kind of put me in a pickle. And so what I did is I just tried to go very small. It's called Elegy on Toy Piano. You don't need a pony to connect you to the unseeable, or an airplane to connect you to the sky. Necessary it is to die if you are a living thing which you have no choice about. Necessary it is to love to live, and there are many manuals, but in all important ways, one is on one's own. You need not cut off your hand No need to eat a bouquet. Your head becomes a peach pit, your tongue a honeycomb. Necessary it is to live to love, to charge into the burning tower, then charge back out, and necessary it is to die, even for the grass, even for the pony connecting you to what can't be grasped. The injured gazelle falls behind the herd, one last wild enjambment. Because of the sores in his mouth, the great poet struggles with a dumpling. His work has enlarged the world, but the world is about to stop including him. He is the tower the world runs out of. When something becomes ash, there is nothing you can do to turn it back. About this, even diamonds do not lie. Thank you.